This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a big good morning to everybody. So, okay, you're right. I don't sound like Frank. That horrible Frank is way down in the Dominican Republic having a lovely holiday, or I assume he's having a lovely holiday. And I'm here with two very special people. Welcome, Sean James. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Nice to see you, and nice to have you back in the studio.
Nice to be seen.
And a very special guest who's never actually been in the studio, but you know her voice, Terry Kennedy. Morning.
Good morning.
Terry is an orchid specialist. She's been on the show via telephone a number of times. And it's always at this time of year. I wonder why we get you right around early February every year.
Well, it's Valentine's.
Yep.
And of course, the Valentine's Orchid Show is next weekend.
That's right. At the Toronto Botanical Gardens.
That's right.
So the Southern Ontario Orchid Society. It's a big show. It's a big deal. So you're going to give us more information about times and admission fees and how many.
I invite you all to come down and see it.
Exactly. And what my favorite number is over 30,000 orchids in bloom. Orchid blooms, I guess is what it actually says.
Yes.
Orchid blooms. 9,000 square feet of orchids. Wow.
That's right. That floral hall in the TBG is full of orchids. And then there's all those plants for sale.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It's the biggest show in Canada.
Yeah, and the experts, too. There's speaking going on. There's all kinds of stuff. So that's definitely one to mark on your calendars. And that is next weekend, right?
That's next weekend.
Next weekend.
The 10th and 11th.
Okay, so we'll give more details so everybody gets your pencils and papers out if you need to write down times, et cetera, because Terry is here as an orchid expert as well. So orchid questions, I told you last week, save your orchid questions for this week because Terry's here. Sean knows everything, so
he's doing the rest.
he'll look after everything else, and I'm going to have a little nap, actually. Sean, do you want to just give the phone numbers in case people don't have us in their speed dial just yet?
I know everything about plants. Phone numbers I'm working on. The local number is 416-360-0740, and the toll-free line is 866-740-4740.
Okay, so I have to tell you one thing I might not have told you about. No, it's a good thing. So Zoomer Media, so where we are right now, of course, is the Zoomerplex. Zoomer Media has made a very nice television premiere. It's premiering week Monday, called Ageless Gardens. 5 episodes. Each is an hour long. They went across the country, a production team went across the country, talking to various people about gardening as we age. And so it's going to be a very good show. There's all kinds of good things on the web that you can see about it at this point. But you're going to want to tune into Vision TV starting Monday, February the 12th, 9 p.m. here in Toronto, in Ontario. Healing Plants is the first topic of the 5-part series. And of course, 4 weeks after that, whenever that is, I'll be in that 4th episode. So, you know, add 4 weeks to February 12th, and that one for sure you're going to want to watch. But the first one is all about plants from nature's pharmacy that have medicinal qualities that heal. So, yeah, lots.
That's super cool. Anything we can do that gets people jazzed about gardening, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
It sounds fantastic.
Well, that's right. And you're going to get us jazzed telling us a bit about garden days in a few minutes. But we have to take one very short little break for our sponsors. And we aren't going anywhere. And I hope nobody else is going anywhere because we'll be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, and here we are. We've been chitter-chattering about all these exciting garden events that are coming up, but we do have some callers. So let's see what Helen in Toronto has to say. Good morning, Helen.
Hello.
What's going on?
I'd like to have some forget-me-nots in my garden, but there's not a lot of sun.
That's okay.
And how do I, like, do I plant them from seed?
Yep.
Oh, I do.
Yep.
And
well, let me ask my experts here. Have you guys ever seen forget-me-nots for sale as a plant?
I have, actually, oddly enough, and I kind of thought, well, why? Because they're so easy to grow. I don't mean why, because I actually love forget-me-nots. Yeah. I get in big arguments with people about them, because people say, well, they take over. No, yeah, but they're so easy to pull out, and they're That's so right. cheerful and blue and lovely.
And it's early.
The easiest way to get them is to take a chunk of someone else's after they're done blooming and they've set seed and just kind of sprinkle them about and rub your hands together, and they just go everywhere that way.
And there's some organization, I'm trying to think who it is. It's not like the Cancer Society.
You're not saying you've forgotten, are you?
Yeah, exactly. I have forgotten who uses forget-me-nots as their giveaway, seed giveaway.
Yes, but, I've seen that too.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who it is. But I forget.
They haven't done it in the last couple of years. They used to do it because I used to get them in the mail. And I'm going, I would go, seeds, forget-me-not seeds, do I really need these?
No, that's right, they did come in the mail.
I would sprinkle them now if I was going to sprinkle
them. Yeah, so anyway.
On top of the snow, even.
Bottom line, Helen, you can definitely get seeds, and you can probably get them at this time of year. You're in Toronto, whatever good garden center you live close to, they'll have seeds out for sale now, and just, you'll see the racks, and there'll be hundreds of seeds to choose from.
There's pink ones and white ones.
And just ask somebody.
I still like the straight blue.
You can't find them.
Prettiest.
Yeah. Oh, they're beautiful color, and they're super reliable, and they're fine in the shade. Main thing is you've got to have a fairly, you can't be a dry desert-like garden. You've got to have some good organic material. They do need that moisture.
So. Fair enough, yeah, you're right. They'll be more dwarf if you don't.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to read Dr. Armitage's book on why plants are called what they're called, some of the stories are hilarious, including forget-me-not, about a knight who wanted to say goodbye to his girl, and he picked these plants off the edge of a stream bank and was about to hand them to her and fell in the water. And instead of taking the armor off and living, threw her the plants and said, forget-me-not.
Okay, that's a good one, Sean. Thank you. Okay, Helen, is that good?
Oh, that's good. And the orchid show sounds enticing.
Oh,
reason to go to Toronto Botanic Gardens.
Definitely want to go to that.
Definitely
want to
be there.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, thanks, Helen. Good sort of segue. Terry, did you want to just give us a little bit of a story about the orchid show that is next weekend, Saturday and Sunday?
Well, the show next weekend is probably the biggest show in Canada. Mm-hmm. It's been going for, 38 years, I guess, now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of plants, and you're going to see things that you never thought were orchids.
Yeah, true.
And they're just so different. And there's so many different orchids that you could start collecting today and collect one different one every day for the rest of your life, and you still wouldn't have one of each one.
Yeah, there's tens of thousands of orchids,
right?
I bet
someone there has the little miniature orchids, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
those are amazing. Saw those in Costa Rica. Thimble-sized.
Yeah.
You have to look
flowering.
The magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Well,
there's some of them are you know, no bigger than about a centimeter or 2 centimeters.
Mm-hmm. It's remarkable.
And then they have flowers, and they will have dozens of flowers on these little plants, and then their fragrance is just amazing.
That's what I was going to say. The last time I went to the orchid show at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, which is Leslie and Lawrence in Toronto, open the doors, walk into the building, and knock your socks off with fragrance. It was so beautiful. And then knock your eyes out with the glory of, because there's quite beautiful, like, different groups set up displays.
That's right.
So it could be, you know, an orchid club. Or it could be, like, I remember last time I was there, the Montreal Botanical Gardens came and they had a display. And then some of the, like, you have your own little company.
We have our own display,
and
Orchids in Our Tropics.
Yep.
But actually the city of Toronto now participates, the conservatories.
Nice.
And last year they had a big tree, so we're waiting to see what they have this year. They really do go whole hog.
Like a big tree where they glued all the orchids on?
They tied them in there, and it was really quite amazing.
Wow.
You know, that the floral hall is very tall, so getting that height in there really made the show really
better.
Spectacular.
Yeah,
it's always fascinating to me that everybody thinks that orchids are tough, and they're so incredibly easy to grow. There's one of the biggest phobias in horticulture is orchids, and yet they're so easy to grow.
I told you I have never met an orchid I couldn't kill. But I've learned a lot. Terry has shared a lot of her expertise, and I currently have 4 orchids, one of which I bought from you, actually, at home, all of which are blooming. So,
oh, that's good. Is it the chocolate one?
Yes.
But see, this is for Valentine's. You need the chocolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Orchid.
The sweet smelling one. I know, I love it. So what are the times on the show, the Orchid Society?
Both Saturday and Sunday. It's open from 11 to 5. And actually, we also have a very special time for photographers when they can actually use their tripods. There's a session in the evening, Saturday evening, and Sunday morning, where we only allow about 40 people in there, and we play music, so it's very quiet, and there's not too many people. So photographers can really take fantastic pictures in there.
Because it's crowded otherwise. Like, otherwise, it's really hard to take good photos.
Yes, and tripods aren't allowed during the rest of the show. So being there for photographers, they really have a good time, and some of the photographs are just incredible.
And do they pay a premium to do that, or is it the same price?
They pay a premium because they are only a few people.
So they pay $20 versus regular admission is
$12.
Okay.
And there is a coupon for the regular admission that you can get from the the society website, which is SOOS.ca. Go in there, and there's a button that says print coupon, or put it on your phone, because you can also use it on your phone.
So it gives you $1,
$2
off. Excellent. So SOOS, Sean is tweeting that as we speak, stands for Southern Ontario Orchid Society.
That's right.
Nice. Oh, I definitely want to be there. Because you can purchase stuff, you can learn stuff. I get calls, and I hope somebody will call in about, or, you know, with some orchid questions with you here. Because, because, you know, like transplanting, that's a big thing, is when to transplant, how to transplant, you know, what to transplant into. That's, to me, that's a big question. And I've struggled with that myself. I think I even called you when I did some transplanting because it was like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, that's what those talks are all about.
Yeah.
And people can ask their questions. And actually, if you have a plant that you really have questions about, you can bring it, put it in a bag and bring it along and talk to the experts. Because if you add up all those years of knowledge, you're probably up at around thousands of hours.
No, it's true.
Years,
yeah, or at least a picture.
So
take a photograph if you're struggling with something, and, you know, bring it with you on your phone or print it off, bring it with, and get some help that way. Wonderful. Thanks, Terry. Listen, quick break. We'll be right back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, let's talk to Jack, who's calling us from Welland. Good morning, Jack. Are you there? Oh, did I just mess that up? Sebastian, did I screw that up? Yes, I did. So we better go to, my mistake, Joan in Mississauga. Good morning. Oh, Sebastian, I need help. All right, we're not,
I feel that way all the time, for what it's worth.
Oops, we lost.
Okay, so, Sean, tell us a little bit about Garden Days. Or no, tell us more about what you're doing, because you were the founder of Fern Ridge Landscaping.
I did. I was Fern Ridge for over 20 years, and now I'm they're still out there doing their amazing thing, and now I'm just doing the consulting and design aspect. I'm just Sean James Consulting and Design. I've got a new website, which is nice and easy, seanjames-consulting.ca, and I'm really having fun. I'm actually getting, you know, I'm not running a company anymore. I'm doing gardening and getting my hands dirty, doing little bits and pieces, and talking about eco-gardening and rain gardens and all the cool jazz that I love.
I know, I was going to say, that's what you do
much
so well.
More relaxed.
Yeah.
And I teach at Mohawk, and I teach the Horticultural Apprenticeship Program, and that all keeps me out of trouble pretty good.
Yeah, and you're having fun. That's the main thing.
I am. Gardening is supposed to be fun.
Yes. And if you're not having fun, don't do it.
That's right.
All right. I'm not going to mess around with anything on the screen here. Hopefully, Sebastian will set us up with Jack in Welland. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Sorry about that.
I'm calling you about bulbs. Uh-huh. I have two great hyacinths, and I also have an Easter lily. Uh-huh. Now, I put them, I have had them in the house over the winter, in the dark and cool. Mm-hmm. And now I took them out of there, and there's greenery started. Mm-hmm. And one of them, that was 2 weeks ago, and one of them now has an opening. So do I fertilize? Do I transplant? What do I do with them?
I assume they're potted up. They're in a pot.
They're in a pot, yeah.
Yeah, so they're all in one pot together?
No, there's two of them together and then one separate.
Okay. And was this Easter lily blooming in your house last Easter?
I'm not sure. I picked it up from the neighbors.
Okay. Likely, Easter lilies are always forced to bloom for Easter, and people buy them and take them home. If it was forced, like I say, which is very likely, it will not force again, meaning it will not bloom again from the pot. Best thing to do is get that. Allow it to continue to grow in your home. Mm-hmm. See what happens. You might get a flower. You might just get leaves. Be careful to not overwater until it really gets growing, because the bulb will rot if you keep
it too wet.
Fertilizing is an okay thing to do once it's actively growing, once you've got leaves and flowers and action happening in the pot. Fertilizer's fine. But in the meantime, just sunshine and water as required. But as soon as we get into the spring and the ground is thawed and we're desperate to get outside and get gardening, I would get those plants into the ground if you can.
The ground,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and just a well-drained spot where the sun will hit it in the spring. Both of them will. Grape hyacinths are the best. They'll spread like crazy. You get a couple of those in the ground.
And the deer don't eat them either, I believe.
That's right.
Which
they
is
are,
nice.
They are excellent for their. And they come up in the fall, too. They'll do this spring.
Not everybody loves that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
spring,
it looks
fall
like grass.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a beautiful sky blue one called Valerie Finis and another one called Oceana. And they're true sky blue. Which
oh, really?
Is lovely. Like
that's why I love
my they're rare
Scylla.
Colors in the garden.
That's right.
Yes, Scylla's beautiful.
We're getting
too.
Our blue yeah. questions today. So, yeah, that's right, blue flowers. So, yeah, get them in the ground if you can, and both of them will be perennial plants. They'll grow forever, come up every spring for you, and get them outside.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks for calling. All right, let's see what's going on in Guelph. We've got Dominic on the line. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, Charlie. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Our pleasure. You are a first-time caller. I'd like to welcome you to the show, and Sean's in charge of making some bell music.
Ding, 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 ding.
You make my day.
Frank took the bell on holiday, so we have Sean here to be the bell.
And Charlie didn't like the digital bell I found. It wasn't belly enough.
All right. You have your wings. So what's going on?
I would like to know, I've been planting the cucumber every year.
Uh-huh.
And after it started flowering, getting the cucumber on it, something on the ground is eating the roots on the bottom. I don't know what to put on the bottom to kill the bugs.
Eating the roots or the leaves?
In the ground.
Really?
In the roots, I think they are.
That's surprising.
Cucumber roots. Could it be voles, do you think? Or grubs?
I mean, it could be. Voles would be more likely. The people that I would ask would be natural insect control. Stacy is an entomologist there, and she really knows her jazz. That's my go-to when I don't know what's going on. Mm. I've had problems with squash vine borer, and it looks like the roots are being eaten because it dies from the ground up.
Yeah.
But I haven't had any. It sort of turns yellowy and icky, and I have to get some traps for them.
Yeah.
But I haven't had any problems with anything eating it from
Root
below
eating.
The ground.
Yeah, so what happens with your cucumbers? The stem just starts to shrivel and turn yellow, Dominic, down like at ground level?
No, it's not yellow. No, because I can see the
actually seeing holes.
The plant started to go down and started weakening. There's no energy to grow anymore.
Some people use
and all of a sudden starting get dying.
Okay, some people use mothballs for stuff like that. Really?
No, okay. Let's not do that. You know what?
I use that mothball too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that didn't work.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of mothballs.
No.
Small children think they're candies. You never know.
Fair enough, yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Squash beetles. There's an insect that carries the virus. I mean, it's all connected, right? You've got that little striped beetle, which I think is called a cucumber beetle or something.
It's called the striped cucumber beetle.
Thank you.
The people who name these things are very literal.
I know.
The red-winged blackbird.
Yeah.
So you can
what is that
them?
Bird called? That black one with the red wing? My friend actually asked her husband that question. He just about fell off his chair. So a striped cucumber beetle starts the problem because it takes a few bites and it passes a virus into the cucumber plant, which then causes the plant to collapse. That's probably what's going on.
Most likely.
How do we avoid that? We avoid that by just taking very good care of the plant. It's in the spring.
Also
the
switching
problems.
Up what you plant where.
Yeah.
I do a lot of my plants in my veggies in planters now. So I'll put the cucumbers in the front yard one year and in the backyard the next year. So even the beetles have trouble getting to it. Another thing is to have good biodiversity, to have a mix of plants that bring in, say, pollinators, because a lot of the pollinators are really good predators. And the more
and you
mixed
need
up your garden is.
Pollinators to get cucumbers.
Yeah, so there's many reasons to have them. And the more mixed up your garden is biodiversity wise, the higher the odds that something's going to eat that.
Problems. So rotating the crops, very important to keep the quality, and obviously, like you said, mess up the systems so that the bugs can't find. That would be probably our best suggestion. Not to mention, Dominic, make sure you're doing a good job in terms of good quality soil where you're planting those cucumbers. Lots of sun. Make sure that they're really happy in the situation they're in. They're less likely to be attacked as well. That's our best suggestion.
Excuse me, Charlie.
Yep.
I would like to know, is there anything I can buy to put in the ground to kill the bugs?
No. There's nothing you can put in the ground because it's not coming from the ground. It's an insect that flies in and takes bites and spreads disease. So there's nothing other than just keep the plants as healthy as you possibly can and hope the bugs won't attack.
For a different situation, if you have problems with voles, there are things that make sound, ultrasonic sound.
Do you ever see any tunnels in the ground, Dominic?
No, I don't see nothing crawling there because, like I said, every year I plant, and this thing you repeat every year when the cucumbers are about 6 inches long. The plants start dying.
All right, so move the cucumbers. Put them in a different spot next year, and maybe that will help, or next spring, so that they're not in the same spot. That might make a big difference for you as well.
The further, the better, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Dominic. Appreciate the call. And always love to have a first-time caller. Don't be a stranger. And look, it's your turn, Terry. We have an orchid question. Great. Yasmin's on the line from Hamilton. Good morning, Yasmin.
Good morning, folks. How are you all?
Excellent.
Excellent.
What's going on?
My question is about dendrobiums.
Yes.
I got a package of them when they were, I call them little babies, about 6 or 8 years ago, and they've never bloomed for me.
Okay. Do you have a name for them? Because there is maybe, 600 species of dendrobiums, and they can be from little tiny, tiny ones that are about an inch high, or some have to grow to 6 feet. So the name is really important with orchids.
Do you know the name, Yasmin? What kind of dendrobium? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, I can't hear you.
Okay. Yasmin, do you know what the name is of the dendrobium that you're growing?
I'm sorry?
The name, besides dendrobium.
No, I'm sorry, I don't know that.
What color is it supposed to bloom?
No idea. It's never bloomed for me.
Okay.
What's them to bloom? Are
general
there
information on it.
Okay, so
I just got leaves, and then I was told last year to leave it out till the first frost. So I repotted it. I put one pot out and brought one in. And the frost actually killed the pot that was outside.
Yes. It's a tropical.
Yeah, it's a tropical. The dendrobiums are definitely tropical. Some of them do like to be cooled in the fall, but they won't take frost.
Yeah.
They won't take frost. Is it getting a lot of sun?
Yes, I've got it in a west window.
And it gets lots
of
sun.
And all these years I've tried different windows. I've tried east, south, and this year I've gone west.
Oh, okay. The thing is that it's really hard to tell, except to say that dendrobium usually needs lots of light. It needs a very small pot because it likes to have its roots wet and then dry. Mm. So you want to put it in a very small pot. So if you've got it over-potted, then it's busy making roots to fill this pot, and until it fills the pot, it's not going to bother to flower.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
all
you
right.
need to have it in a small pot. You can start feeding it now that the days are starting to get longer, and use a bloom type fertilizer. If it doesn't have instructions for orchids, as long as it's a good quality and it has the minor micro components.
Nutrients, yep.
Then
yeah, I usually get my orchid soil and fertilizer at the RBG Orchid Show.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So
I know it's good quality.
Yeah, so that's good. So you can start using that. And light is actually the thing. And does it get a drop in temperature at night?
Yes, there is a drop of temperature. Yeah. Yes.
So you're doing the right things. It may be, you know, some plants, some orchids actually take 15 to 20 years to mature.
Yeah.
And some dendrobiums have to get fairly tall before they will bloom.
So sometimes it's an age thing. The plant has to be a certain age before it's mature to flower.
Okay, yeah, because as I say, I got them...
As babies.
I call them as babies, like little bubbles or whatever those things are. Yeah.
Ah, they're still teenagers. Yeah. They're not flowering yet.
Okay, so they're not ready to bloom yet. Okay.
You just see, the thing that orchids teach you is... Patience.
How many more years of patience do I require?
And perseverance.
Yeah.
So that's what you learn when you're trying to
bloom. Hopefully next year when I call you, I'll tell you they've bloomed.
Excellent.
Perfect. Well, maybe we'll see you at the RBG show and you can come and talk to us.
Yeah, so to be clear, next weekend, 10th and 11th, is TBG show, so Toronto Botanical Gardens, the following weekend.
No, two weeks after that.
So
the
24th,
the 24th yeah.
and 25th, we'll be at the Royal Botanical Gardens Burlington. So same show, but not as big in Burlington as it is in Toronto. So for anybody who's living down that way, Hamilton Way, it's easier than coming to Toronto, but the Toronto show is bigger and better, of course.
Of course.
Goes without saying. It's so Toronto. All right, we have a couple minutes before we have to go on a break, and we have Pat calling from Coburg. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'll make it quick. I have a Gerbera daisy.
Yeah.
I bought it last spring, had it indoors, then I planted it outside for the summer. It was beautiful, it bloomed, and just before it got too cold to be outside, I just kind of scooped it up, dirt and all, and plumped it in a pot.
Uh-huh.
And it's been fine, except, and I know I should have dunked the pot in water, and I didn't. But I did later.
Uh-huh.
But what's happening with it is it wants to live, it wants to grow, it produces new roots, but then they turn yellow and then brown on the ends, and just I take them off.
You're talking about leaves there.
The leaves. I have leaves.
Yeah.
And also, in the beginning, I looked at the back of the leaf, and I thought it had, like, dirt had splashed up on it. You know, when you water it with a hose outside, dirt splashes up on the back of it.
Uh-huh.
But I found out that probably wasn't what it was, because the leaves started to die. So I've been spraying it faithfully with... and insecticidal soap.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I've cleared the problem up. It gets lots of new leaves, and it starts all over again.
Huh. I think it's amazing that you've kept it alive this long. Really?
For a plant that's from South Africa, they're really finicky.
They are. They are not an easy plant to keep alive. Like, good for you.
Yeah,
you've
feast or famine,
it's January.
They're tricky to keep going.
Yeah, they're very susceptible to mildew. So the way they grow in that tight little rosette, and of course the flower and the new leaves, everything's in the center. Invariably,
they get mites and aphids and thrips and all
sorts
of things.
Or it all just collapses inward with all kinds of mildews and mold.
I wonder if it's from South Africa, if we're potting them in too rich a mix. I wonder if they need a little more
dry, well-drained,
more vermiculite or perlite in the soil.
It may
be interesting to play around with. Yeah.
Well, for sure, Pat, they want full sun. We know that.
Yes, I have it in a sunroom that's like three walls of windows, and I get the east and the south and the west. And it's,
And what I would probably do with a plant like that at this time of year is I would set up the pebble tray. So you've got the little cookie sheet or whatever with gravel, and then the pot of any of your tropical plants sitting on top of the gravel, and then water in the gravel, just raising the
humidity
around the plant.
Okay. Do you think I'm overwatering it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do not keep it constantly moist. Allow that plant to dry down between watering. So feel the soil or feel the weight of the pot. It does need to get quite dry between watering.
And the only way
that may be my problem, but well, I'll give it a try, and I'll let you know if it survives to go back outside again.
Yeah, really. And if it does, you get like a big prize. Seriously.
Well, I've got the Dusty Miller that's been growing for about 4 years.
That's great.
Outside or inside?
You bring it in, obviously.
No,
or does it keep coming up?
Yeah.
No, I don't dig up the Dusty Miller. I just leave it, and it gets about 2 feet tall and blooms yellow flowers.
Oh, yeah.
It's Coburg.
You have a good garden.
Yeah, true. Yeah. You're in Coburg.
Oh, I'm in Coburg this summer, speaking.
Are you?
Well, it gets pretty cold in Coburg, let me tell you.
No, I know, but you're near the lake, so
yeah,
you've
it's
got
moderated
it's
a
more
bit.
Moderated.
The lake is a heat sink.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I am down near the lake.
Yeah,
but,
so you're not
you know,
as extreme.
Lately, I feel like I'm living in the North Pole.
Let's try to move north of Toronto.
Terry lives up
all right,
in Stouffville.
Thank you for your help.
Thanks so much, thanks. Pat. Good luck again, and thanks for sharing that story. I love that. Okay, quick break, and we will be right back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
So you think we're having fun on air. You should hear what kind of fun we're having off air. All right, Sean, the phone numbers, please.
So if you're a local caller, it's 416-360-0740. And if you're calling from further away, it's toll-free 866-740-4740.
Excellent. Thank you. We do have some lines open if you'd like to call. Remember, the orchid expert is here. So orchid questions are really appreciated. And if you don't ask orchid questions, I will. Meanwhile, we've got Suzanne on the line from Mississauga. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a big problem with rabbits. How do I discourage them from coming into the yard?
Sean, did you have a, get a dog, right?
I was actually bouncing up and down. There's a wonderful recipe, believe it or not, and the Winnipeg Parks Department used to use this on their, I don't know if they still do, on their tulips to repel deer. Mm-hmm. And it's 2 eggs, 2 cups of milk, 2 liters of water, pardon me bouncing around in measurements, 2 tablespoons of dish soap, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and you can throw in cayenne pepper as well if you want. And
but
you spray it on.
A little slower because
Hold on. Start again.
2 eggs, 2 cups of milk.
Very good. 2 liters of water.
2 liters of water.
2 tablespoons of olive oil.
2 tablespoons of olive oil.
And the same of dish soap.
2 tablespoons of dish soap.
And then you can add in some cayenne pepper if you want as well.
Yeah.
And then you spray it on the plants about once a month.
Okay.
The eggs help it stick, but also to the animals. To us, it doesn't smell like anything, but to the animals, it smells like rotten eggs.
Okay.
And I know there's been research done on it down in Arkansas at the university down there. I know that Winnipeg Parks uses it, and I've got anecdotal evidence. Wow. Say that again. Yeah. Anecdotal evidence from friends that it works on bunnies and even squirrels to stop them from eating stuff.
What about
them
voles?
Too, but these are worse.
I don't know about voles. Yes, well, no, I know it works on bunnies.
Yeah,
and I know how bad bunnies are, believe me. One year I breached my own protocols and I cut down my gardens in the fall to help improve hawk habitat. It didn't work. The bunnies ate everything.
Really?
And the hawks started taking my songbirds. So I'm never ever doing that again. The garden stays standing till spring from now on.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So that little recipe should work quite well, and it's super non-toxic. And
you can make it yourself. And do you keep it in the refrigerator? It must smell horrible.
Well, it's only I would spray what I made.
2 liters. That's a lot. That's a lot of liquid.
The whole garden.
You could do the whole garden. Yeah, because it's going to make to the animals. It's going to make your whole garden smell like rotten eggs. So
do that today.
Mind
you, it's going to snow tomorrow.
I would do it on the first warm day.
Oh.
And you want to spray so the plants are sort of covered in it.
Dripping.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't want to do it when it's like super cold.
Right.
Okay. So what do you do right now if the rabbits are eating everything?
You learn to like rabbits or make Hassan Pfeffer.
yes. Exactly.
Yeah, they're a problem no matter what. But you know, your first warm day, then you can get out there and tackle it, and it should last about a month.
Okay.
So it doesn't get washed off by the rain?
Well, the eggs wash off eggs. It's
yeah, good
really
luck with that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the soap, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
excellent.
The soap acts as a sticker spreader.
And dogs are good. And yeah, I know. Anyway.
We need a rent-a-dog business.
That's true.
Cats don't do anything with rabbits.
No.
I actually have a feral cat that lives in my back garden, and he catches rabbits.
Big ones?
Well.
Actually, feeding the birds and having a perch. Like how you got real quiet there. And having a perch for the hawks will come in and they'll look around and they'll also keep rodents.
And the hawk population is definitely on the increase, I think.
We have too many bad stories about eco, and we've got to recognize that we're doing some good things. The hawk population's up. Lichens on trees, gray and orange and black stuff that grows on trees,
trunks.
That's actually really susceptible to air pollution. So that shows that we're getting our air pollution down.
Yes.
We're doing some good things.
We
have to recognize that. And gardeners have every tool that it takes to fix most of the problems that the world is having.
There you go.
There you go.
On Yay, that gardeners. Note. Yes. Thank you, Sean. All right. Let's see. So that's the best we can do, Suzanne, in terms of rabbits. But I like your recipe. I just wrote it down. All right. Let's see. We've got a question about spider plants from Marion in Toronto. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have two spider plants. One is plain green and the other is sort of a variegated. Now, the plain green one is fine. The variegated one gets brown tips on it. Do I cut it off, cut them off, or why do they do that?
I always cut them off on an angle. Why do they do it? It's pollutants in the water, things like fluorides and chlorides. A plant is going to take that and concentrate it away.
Tap water.
From its heart. Yes, from tap water.
Yes.
Oh.
So the trick is don't use tap water.
Leave it out overnight helps too.
Leave it out for over 24 hours and you won't get the tips burn quite as easily. It's that whole family of plants. Mm-hmm. There's a whole family that they get the little tip burn from fluoride, chlorine,
yep.
various additives to our drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And they try and get those toxins away from the center of the plant, which is why it sits the tips.
Yeah.
Right. Also, I wanted to let you know that it's Habitat for Humanity that used to send out the seeds.
The forget-me-nots.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because we forgot. I'm glad you remembered. Thanks, Marianne. All right. We have one final little break we have to take, and then we'll be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, here we go, and we don't have much time left, so quickly, what's going on in Hamilton? Nick is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Can you hear us?
I certainly can. Another source for forget-me-not is the Alzheimer's Society.
Okie doke. There you go. Habitats for Humanity and Alzheimer's.
Clever.
Makes sense.
Yep.
And a quick question about hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. To get them to turn blue, I've used sort of a mulch from pine needles and stuff. That seems to work.
It's a good idea.
But I also wondered if just putting vinegar on them would work.
Could, but I wouldn't do it.
You're going to hurt everything in the soil column if you do that. That's not generally
okay,
a good
too
idea.
Strong, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll keep it up with the pine mulch.
Careful is good, natural is good.
Yeah, and of course, pine needles, as they decompose, are acidifying the soil, which
releases the iron and the other nutrients in the soil, which is what makes it blue.
Yeah, or you can actually buy something called soil acidifier. And soil acidifier is a bunch of sulfur and a bunch of iron, and you sprinkle it on the soil, and it helps to acidify as well. But
it's really better to just plant the plants that like the soil that you've got than you don't have to fight forever. I'm a lazy, lazy gardener, I guess. But
Well, we've got lots of pine trees and evergreens, so we get lots of needles.
Oh, there you go. You're perfect. Then you're doing everything right.
Good use for it.
Excellent. Awesome. Thanks for your call. Good idea. And you might want to go into the business, start packaging pine needles. People will buy. Get those blue hydrangeas going. All right. And here we go. Terry, it's your turn. Earl's on the line from St. Catharines. Good morning. And first time caller. Ding, 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 ding. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
What's going on with your orchids?
I would like to speak to an orchid specialist because there isn't one in this house.
Well, I have one right in front of me.
My wife likes orchids, and she has one here. It's an orchid, and it's called a Phalaenopsis.
Yes.
And she's had it for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it bloomed, of course, when we got it because it was on the tall stick. And now all I have is these 5 to 6 inch big green elephant leaves on it.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a bloom since.
Okay, so it is producing new leaves?
Yes. Sounds like it.
Yes.
In 2 years. Yeah.
We keep getting nice new leaves up the middle, and then there's one down here at the bottom that's kind of turning yellow, which she says will fall off in another day or two.
Normal.
That's normal. It's sort of shedding old leaves is normal for orchids. Now, you know why orchids don't bloom? Oftentimes it's because they're too happy. Because the reason they bloom is to reproduce. So if it's the temperature is very even, then there's no reason for the plant to be afraid of being killed or stressed or anything. So if you can cool your orchid in overnight, then drop the temperature, maybe put it close to the window. At this time of year, that it's close to the window, it gets really cool at night.
Right.
That'll sort of shock it into blooming.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And the other thing you can do is, do you feed your orchid?
Sorry?
Fertilizer.
Fertilizer?
No.
Well, you know, you get hungry, so do your plants.
True, true. But she waters it faithfully every couple of weeks. She doesn't use the ice cubes because she thinks that's too cold.
Thank you. We were chatting about that a little while ago.
The neighbor said something about using just tepid water to water them.
Well, room temperature water, and that's perfect. But using
it run through the earth and then lets it drain completely and. Mm-hmm.
And make sure that when she's watering it, the pot should be flooded, so you can see the water on the top, and then drain it right through.
Yes,
and that's really important.
Mm. Well, I'm waiting very patiently for a new bloom on this one.
Well, try the orchid food.
Okay.
And it usually should be a higher first middle number, or the African violet.
Blooming food
is very good too.
Granny's bloomers.
Granny's bloomers will work very well.
I love that.
Great name.
Bloomers.
But the other thing you can do is give it some Epsom salts.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
a couple of waterings with Epsom salts, like a tablespoon in a couple of liters of water. Do it for a couple of weeks,
okay.
And then go back to watering and fertilizing every other week or so.
Is there a best time to do that?
Well, I just bought her another one, a nice gold-colored one, and she hasn't given up on this one, so we'll keep trying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they'll bloom again. They're really very hardy.
They'll last for years.
You can have them blooming, actually, if you don't cut the stems back, you can have them blooming I've had people say they bloom 4 and 5 years
nonstop. Yeah.
So they will bloom. And But sometimes they need a little bit of stress to think, well, hey, maybe something's happening. I need to reproduce.
And I think you're right about the nutrition. If they've got to have that fertilizer to really encourage.
Yeah.
You get bigger, brighter blooms as well with the fertilizer.
Yes.
Well, we'll keep trying. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And all right, so thanks for your call. And we don't, unfortunately, have time for any more calls. But we did just get that little thing about the ice cube sorted out.
Is there a best time to fertilize, by the way? Is it all year long? Or?
Well, we don't usually fertilize sort of in December or January. But starting now, yes, the days get longer. It's just that if you're growing under lights where the light is the same all year round, then you can fertilize all year round.
Into the
and
mic.
Then it
Talk
also
into
depends.
The mic, not to
oh,
each other. And you too. You're doing this.
So you want to...
Yep. Just carry on.
So you want to fertilize when the plants are growing. So
Actively growing.
Right. And in the tropics, they're usually actively grown. There are some that actually do need a dormant period. Mm-hmm. But we don't suggest you start with those. We
right.
get you hooked on the easy ones.
Like the Phalaenopsis.
Like the Phalaenopsis.
Then we established that the ice cube watering was bad.
Well, because it's too cold.
What's the best way to water them?
We got 20 seconds to answer that question.
Room temperature water and lots of water when you water.
Right. And well-drained afterwards. No sitting in water.
Yes. And
right.
grow them over on a pebble tray.
Yeah. Cool.
Super cool.
Very nice.
Thank you.
So listen, you two, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'll even invite you to come for breakfast, if you like, after this, for coming today, being such great guests.
Always a blast.
Cheerful.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Full of great information. I know our callers totally appreciate hearing different voices and different experts. So again, my big thanks to both of you. Thank you, Sebastian. Couldn't do it without you. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.